ESPN Sports Radio 1300 and 92.5.
Now for something completely different.
We're gonna bring it all together.
Cause that's the bottom line.
ESPN Radio 1300, 92.5. Good morning. It's the Bottom Line with Brad Taylor, presented by StableDuel. Sports talk from a handicapping perspective. Thank you for joining us on this beautiful Sunday. Miss Judy, please take your meds this morning, or I will make sure you actually get some action down on all your horse racing picks going forward. We know you don't want that. Well, maybe you did after yesterday. 859-381-1313. If you'd like to call and join in on the conversation, you can email us anytime, bottomlinelex@gmail.com. And you can follow us on Twitter, @bottomlinelex. On today's show, our ESPN Radio in-house Reds expert and a man who now has plenty of time to do nothing but read box scores, our friend Alan Stein will join us for our Reds Roundup, which is what we're calling his new segment on this show once a month, to talk about nothing but Reds, because we are the voice of the Reds here on ESPN Radio 1300 92.5. The biggest horse race in the world took place yesterday, and we had a few winners and a few losers. We will discuss. The NFL draft finally ended, but we have one question for Kentucky and the Big Blue Nation regarding that draft. And, of course, the most profitable segment in Lexington radio, our Mac Daddy Stogie Picks, presented by Jake's Cigar Bar. All this and much, much more on this week's Sunday edition of Lexington's fastest-growing sports talk radio show. But first, Brad the Animal Leslie. Who the heck is Brad Leslie, and why is he called the Animal? In 1982, a man named Brad Leslie was a relief pitcher that was called up to the major leagues by the Cincinnati Reds. He was a first-round pick in the 1978 draft, according to Wikipedia. And also according to Wikipedia, I'm reading the following. Leslie was an especially imposing physical figure, standing 6 feet 6 inches and weighing 230 pounds. Nicknamed the Animal, he was known for his aggressive style of self-motivation. Well, that's an understatement to say the least. Brad Leslie quickly earned the reputation as a trash talker on the mound. Literally after every strikeout, he would yell and clench his fists and do his little dance, almost like a mini Mark Gastineau, if you can remember him back in the day. In fact, there was an old show back in the day called This Week in Baseball, if you remember that one. It was basically just a corny baseball highlight show for a time when we weren't able to see baseball highlights on our cell phones just seconds after they happened. But This Week in Baseball was typical of the 70s and the 80s. We got to watch baseball highlights, things we didn't get to do normally. But then on that little show, a half-hour show, we did. It was fun. For years in the 80s, at the very end of the show called This Week in Baseball, they showed Brad the Animal Leslie yelling on the mound after getting a strikeout. Even after Brad Leslie was out of Major League Baseball, that highlight stayed on the show for several years afterwards. And when Leslie was called up to the Reds, he started out on fire, probably because most people were scared to death of the guy. In his first season, he pitched 28 games with a 2.59 ERA and 4 saves. And after each save, you would have thought he won the World Series. He would shake hands with his teammates with one hand and slap them in the face with his glove with the other hand. To say the least, he was very intense and very memorable. But guys like this are always polarizing. You either really like them or you really don't. In fact, there's a video on YouTube, you can find it, Nolan Ryan striking out a guy against the Reds and then doing the little Brad Leslie celebration just to the Reds dugout. Including Leslie, they were all shown laughing at the intense Nolan Ryan. Of all people, Nolan Ryan doing the Brad Leslie celebration right to the Reds dugout. But everybody in the Reds dugout laughed. For a guy to be so much of a jerk that the great Nolan Ryan is taken out of his game to imitate you, that's saying something for how ridiculous you might be. But this was the 80s, and times were a little bit different back then. But the thing that made Brad Leslie an afterthought was that he wasn't a very good major league pitcher. After that decent first season, Brad Leslie only pitched 34 more innings in the majors, and with only two saves and a career ERA after that of 5.29. So it was a short but memorable Major League Baseball career for Brad the Animal Leslie. But why was it memorable? Not because he was a good pitcher, but because of his behavior while he was pitching. Why do you think I remember him? It's not because he was Bruce Sutter or Goose Gossage of the day, but because he was a crazy man. After his Major League Baseball career ended, Brad Leslie pitched in Japan for a couple seasons and then settled into a career that was perfect for him. Entertainment. He stayed in Japan, became a baseball commentator for several years, and he even played a character named Animal Leslie on a Japanese game show. Boy, I'd be interested to see that game show today. And he was an actor in seven movies, including Mr. Baseball with Tom Selleck, a.k.a. Magnum P.I. Sadly, Brad Leslie passed away in 2013 at the age of 54, but four decades later, after he was a major league pitcher, Brad the Animal Leslie is still being remembered today for being a flash-in-the-pan pitcher who pissed off a lot of people on the mound. Equate Brad the Animal Leslie to the Reds' Amir Garrett. Hey, I like Amir Garrett. I'm rooting for him. I hope he does great. This guy took on the entire Pittsburgh Pirates dugout a couple of years ago. The entire dugout, all by himself. That takes guts. And it takes knowing your teammates will back you up, too. But Amir Garrett is not a good major league pitcher. In fact, he's below average. Before this year, and we will get into this year in just a minute, but before this year, Garrett had one career save and an ERA of 4.89, with an ERA plus of 93 when the average is 100. But when the Reds traded their closer, Raisel Iglesias, last offseason, Garrett proclaimed himself the closer. David Bell didn't say it. Amir Garrett said it. So when David Bell was asked in the spring about his closer situation, we're going to go with the committee to start these games, to close these games to start the season. But Garrett stood his ground. He kept saying, I'm the closer. And in fact, he struck out the first nine guys he faced in spring training to prove it. Okay, you're the closer. It's one thing to strike out guys in spring training, and it's another to strike them out in April. And it's not like Garrett is a spring chicken anymore because he's 29 years old now. You don't see many relief pitchers on the rise at 29 years old. Most times, you see them on the decline. And if you're asking him to close games and do things he's never done before, it's not exactly a recipe for success. But of course, Garrett talks a lot on the mound. Do you know why some people don't like it? Because he doesn't have the numbers to back it up. Mariano Rivera, the best closer of all time. Did he ever talk trash? Would you even recognize his voice today if you heard it? He didn't talk a lot. What closers in baseball history talked a lot of trash? There's guys like Al Hrabowski, the Mad Hungarian as he was known. Just because he looked mean and slammed his ball into the glove. Didn't mean he was any good. Dennis Eckersley celebrated more than he probably should have. But the difference between Dennis Eckersley and Amir Garrett, Eckersley could back it up. He's in the Hall of Fame. Amir Garrett cannot back it up. So yesterday, things came to a head for Garrett yet again. Sure, he got two outs, one by striking out Anthony Rizzo, tough left-handed hitter for the Cubs, a guy he was talking trash to even before the at-bat started. And when Rizzo struck out, Garrett started talking trash and pointing to the ground like he just drank his beer and stole his girlfriend. Rizzo, a World Series champion, three-time All-Star, just walked back to the dugout because he's been there before. He's acting like he's been there before because he has. Rizzo's teammate, though, Javier Baez, who also has a history with Garrett. Does anyone in the National League Central not have a history with Garrett at this point? Baez came out of the dugout, taking up for his teammate Rizzo, and as usual, the bench is cleared yet again. Baez and Garrett had a bench-clearing incident a couple of years ago as well, so it's not like Garrett hasn't had issues with opponents before. Bottom line credo, we say this all the time, it all depends on who you are in life. If Amir Garrett was a good major league pitcher, closing games and getting saves all the time, he could get away with his on-mound antics with no problem. But he isn't a good pitcher. So it's tough to have a lot of on-field respect for a pitcher with a lifetime ERA of over 5 and one career save coming into the year, including 2 this year, though. And he's more known for his confrontations than getting batters out, especially for a guy with an ERA in double digits right now. So as Brad the Animal Leslie taught us almost 40 years ago, acting like a maniac on the mound might be memorable, but unless you can get hitters out, you'll only be remembered for the behavior and not your skills and talents. And that's the bottom line. ESPN Radio 1392.5, The Bottom Line with Brad Taylor, presented by StableDuel. Sports talk from a handicapping perspective. Of course, the Cubs defeated the Reds, oh, by the way, 3-2 yesterday. Luis Castillo gave up 3 runs in 5 1/3 innings. His ERA now 6.07. Sheesh, what happened to this guy? He was supposed to be an ace. We were thinking, you know, top 10 major league pitcher this year. It ain't happening so far. But the worst player in the major leagues in April got off to a great start to repeat that honor in May as Eugenio Suarez started the month with another 0-for-4 game and 3 strikeouts. Sheesh. The man has a 125 batting average now with 43 strikeouts and 96 at-bats. Terrible. What happened to this guy? We'll have to discuss him with our ESPN Radio Reds expert, Alan Stein, about both these guys later in the show. But today, 1240 here on ESPN Radio, 1392.5, the rubber game of the 3-game series between the Cubs and Reds at Great American Ballpark. Trevor Williams starts for the Cubs, 2-2, 4.44 ERA. And Travis Malley goes for the Reds, 1-1, 1.75 ERA. These two National League Central rivals have split the first 2 games of the series, and the Reds won the opener as small favorites, about a -120. Cubs won yesterday as a big dog, +140 dog. Williams versus Tyler Malley. Malley's a 1.75 ERA. This line opened Cincinnati, home favorite, about -150. Chicago, +140. The road dog, but as we've seen with so many road dogs this year, the value's on the Cubs. Public all over the Reds, because you have a better pitcher on the mound, in theory, in Tyler Malley. However, despite the lopsided support, we've seen Cincinnati go from -150 now to -140, and that's a sharp reverse line move. And what that means out in the desert, we like to go with the Cubs today. The Cubs have value, a dog off of a win, a divisional underdog on the road who've seen their line improve, and all those things point to a lot of winners so far this year. Underdogs, and we'll get to these in just a minute, underdogs have really cashed in so far in Major League Baseball today. We've also seen some under money show up on this when the total opened at 9, and a lot of places now it's 8.5. And when the total is 8.5 or higher this year, the under, 58% on the season, so always look to play the under with a total of 8.5 or higher. Trevor Williams for the Cubs today, his first season in Chicago after 6 long years in Pittsburgh. Williams, 31-37 his career, his teams are, but a 4.43 ERA, and an ERA plus of 95, where the average is 100. This year, same guy, 2-2 with the Cubs, 4.44 ERA. He's basically the same guy in Chicago he was in Pittsburgh. Williams' teams are 47-52 in his career starts, which is decent considering he pitched for Pittsburgh for 5 years, but Williams has dominated the Reds while in Pittsburgh. Trevor Williams, 8-3 in his career against the Reds, including 3-0 in Great American Ballpark. Williams is better and more profitable out in the desert against the Reds than any other team that he's faced. Trevor Malley goes for the Reds today. He's been the best starting pitcher for the Reds this season without question, but he has a history of mediocrity against the Cubs. Malley's 8 starts against the Cubs. He's gone 4-4 his teams have in those starts. My numbers say the Reds should be about a -130 to -135 favorite out in the desert. But Malley's hot start makes them about a -140, and it might go up before the game starts this afternoon. So the value again today, like we said yesterday, is on the Cubs. Not something that you want to maybe put the college fund on. But yeah, the value's on the Cubs today. It was on them yesterday. A little bit of value on it today. And that's the bottom line. ESPN Radio 1392.5. The bottom line with Brad Taylor, presented by StableDuel. Sports talk from a handicapping perspective. Well, the NFL draft, finally over. I think the Kings of Leon are still playing on stage next to that stupid recliner chair. Let's just go back to the old Pete Rozelle days when he'd come out chain-smoking Marlboros and rattling off draft picks in front of a few rowdy fans in New York City, like the good old days. That's just me. But Kentucky players really cashed in yesterday. Dallas drafted two Kentucky players, so look for more bandwagon jumpers around here. Great. That's just what we need here in Lexington. More Dallas Cowboy fans. I digress. It's not like the old days with Roger Staubach. Now, that's a man you could root for. The guys now, not so much. UK had six players drafted this weekend. Only seven schools had more players drafted this weekend than Kentucky. Let me list those seven schools for you. Listen to these names. Alabama, Ohio State, Notre Dame, Georgia, Michigan, Florida, LSU. Wow, that's an impressive list. So, of course, that leads us to one question. With so many NFL draft picks, how come this team went 4-6 last year? Was it poor quarterback play? Was it that we went over ad nauseum? Lord knows, we went over the great quarterback play for Kentucky last fall. Was it antiquated coaching? Was it too much reliance on a prehistoric running offense with no passing game? All things we can debate, but the past is the past. Come August, we will once again hear all the local Homer media call for 8, 9, 10, 12, 20, 40 wins for Kentucky football this year. And incredibly, the Homer portion of Big Blue Nation media still thinks this team will be so much better with A, a new offense, B, a new quarterback, and C, losing six NFL draft picks. Sometimes when you say things out loud, these unrealistic expectations make less and less sense. And that's the bottom line. ESPN Radio 1300 92.5. The Bottom Line with Brad Tanner, presented by StableDuel. Sports talk from a handicapping perspective. Coming up after the break. You know, we know what you want. It's the most profitable segment in Lexington Radio. Coming off a huge day yesterday, we won baseball. We had guys coming on picking derby winners. So our Mac Daddy Stogie Picks, presented by Jake Cigar Bar. That's right. Coming up next, right here on ESPN Radio 1300 and 92.5. ESPN Radio 1300, 92.5. Wasn't this on a commercial lately? Recently? Well, they'll do anything for money. Rat. R-E-T-T. The Bottom Line with Brad Taylor, presented by StableDuel. Sports talk from a handicapping perspective, presented by StableDuel. I think we already said that. Thanks so much for joining us on this Sunday. It's time now for the most profitable segment in Lexington Radio, our Mac Daddy Stogie Picks, presented by Jake Cigar Bar. How do you celebrate picking a winner? Head on down to Jake's Cigar Bar at Brandon Crossing and light up that Mac Daddy Stogie even before the game ends. That's how sure we are of our picks here on this show. As they say, Jake's, smoke local, drink local, and cross the line with us at Jake's Cigar Bar. Check them out online, jakescigarbar.com, and tell our friends Jake and Autumn that the Bottom Line sent you, and they will treat you like the kings, just like they treat us. That's Jake's Cigar Bar, Brandon Crossing, jakescigarbar.com. Well, let's give credit to our experts, and, well, we hate to say it, but our nemesis and hated rival, Dead Air Dennis Dillon of 92.1 Classic Rock, was on point yesterday. He told us to make sure you had Medina Spirit in your exacta, and Medina Spirit won the race. And he told us his sleeper pick was Hot Rod Charlie, although I don't know, it's 7-1, how much a sleeper pick really is. Hot Rod Charlie came in third, so a big day cashing tickets for Dead Air Dennis Dillon of 92.1 Classic Rock, who will now become even more unbearable around here. I'm going to have to make sure to avoid him at all costs this week. But then again, I do avoid him at all costs, even in normal weeks. So nothing's changed. And of course, our own official Bottom Line horse racing expert, Payron Harris of Richmond, was big on Mandaloon, who finished second, paying off a big number. He told us on Friday that he loved Mandaloon, getting that big number. And he was right. So he told us to make sure he was in all our exotics. So let's hope you got in on all that action, especially with our Payron Harris of Richmond, our Bottom Line horse racing expert, being so big on a big underdog like Mandaloon. And Brian Howard of StableDuel came on yesterday. He came through for us with a big winner of the race just before the Derby, giving us Colonel Liam in that one. So all winners all day, all around, here from the experts, although it truly pains me to call Dead Air Dennis Dillon an expert. But he's earned it this spring. We will have the same cast of characters, hopefully, on 13 days from now for Preakness Saturday. So hopefully we can cash some tickets for us for you then. And a special shout-out to Miss Judy, who I always remind to take her meds at the top of this program. Just before the Derby, she told me her trifecta was 7, 8, 9, and just said it in passing. No, I paid no attention, of course, because, well, Miss Judy picks her nose better than she picks horses. Well, it finished 8, 7, 9, almost her 7, 8, 9. But, of course, as always happens in gambling, Miss Judy swears on everything holy that she always boxes her trifectas, so she would have won big. Now, apparently, I owe her $3,393.80. So if anyone has any odd jobs they'd like done this week for a small fee, please let us know here at the bottom line, because we are in deep to Miss Judy for her incredible trifecta pick. She's going to have Moose and Rocco help me find my checkbook if I don't come up with that $3,393.80 by the end of the week. Of course, I will get her action down for the Preakness, and she'll lose her tail. Oh, well, it's just another reason, another lesson learned when it comes to gambling. And never forget this, people. The less you bet, the more you lose when you win. Think about that one for a minute. The less you bet, the more you lose when you win. Words to live by here on the bottom line. And the winners don't stop there. Of course, it was also a good day for us who partake in Major League Baseball, as we told you that the Brewers would pull off the upset over the Dodgers yesterday, although it wasn't really an upset. We had a tough time understanding how the Brewers were underdogs in this one. But seeing the Dodgers as road favorites this year might be a very profitable trend going forward, given that they are defending World Series champions and they're loaded with the best talent in Major League Baseball. They'll be favored basically almost every night this season. Also, the Brewers, now the best team in the National League record-wise. We said this before the season. We'd like them to win the National League Central at 3-1. And with a starting rotation with two All-Stars, Woodruff and Burns, potentially the best bullpen in the league with Josh Hader, it's tough to go against this team long-term. Underdogs, again, ruled the day yesterday. They went 8-7 against the favorites in Major League Baseball. If you've played the underdogs this year, you have really raked up. Overs hit big yesterday, but the unders still lead on the year. We'll stick with road dogs for our Mac Daddy Stogie pick today, presented by Jake Cigar Bar. Chicago White Sox and Cleveland. Cleveland a -165 in this one. We've got Zach Plesac for Cleveland, 1-3, 5.81. Oh, and Lucas Giolito for the White Sox. Oh, he's a good pitcher. Oh, is he? He's 1-2 this season, 5.68 ERA. Lucas Giolito considered one of the best pitchers in baseball, but if you look at his stats this year, not so much. Oh, the first thing you're going to say, oh, yeah, that Patriots Day game when he went one inning and gave up 8 runs. Yeah, that was a bad game. But he had 8 days until his next outing after that one, and he only went 6 innings and still gave up 4 runs to the Detroit Tigers. Not like the Dodgers, the Tigers. So there's something up with Giolito here. He's a big favorite today against Cleveland. Yeah, Zach Plesac, he's been about on par with Giolito this year. You're getting value with Cleveland today. You see the White Sox, a -165 home favorite. Yeah, let's take Cleveland today. I have a pitcher in the White Sox. I don't really know if he's on or not, because the numbers the last few starts say, something might be wrong with him. He took 8 days between his last start. Hasn't been right for a while now. Let's take Cleveland getting some value today as a big underdog on the road against the White Sox. There is our Mac Daddy Stogie of today. Take Cleveland as a big road dog against Chicago. There you go. Coming up after the break, though, we're going to talk more Major League Baseball with our in-house ESPN Radio Reds expert, Alan Stein. That's coming up after the break, right here on ESPN Radio 1300 and 92.5. ESPN Radio 1300, 92.5. Who are you? That's who we can ask our next guest, because we're not going to see him a whole lot anymore. We'll be asking, who is this guy coming around? He is our in-house ESPN Radio Reds expert. He is the great Alan Stein. Alan, how's the retirement treating you, and how's the good times? Are you riding on your horse out in the sunset like Roy Rogers did?
No, that's it. I can't find a horse.
Can't find a horse?
And that included all day yesterday.
Oh, well, there you go. I'm sure some are headed to the glue factory this morning, that maybe not at Churchill Downs. Go ahead.
I was on my friend Kenny Peake's horse, King Fury. And when he scratched out, I just kind of lost any interest in finding a winner, obviously.
See, even in retirement, you're still name dropping with the best of them. I mean, that's such a great quality. See, that's why you're laughing, because you know I'm right on that one. Hey, we were talking before we came on. Brad the Animal Leslie, you said that was a great reference. Tell me about what you know about him.
Well, I remember him very well. And you described him perfectly. He was out of control, nutcase kind of guy. And the first five or six outings that he had were really electric and a lot of fun to watch. And the fans just loved him and remember him. And so, you know, you're right that being remembered for that is not necessarily the way you want your career to go, and especially when you're referencing Garrett. But from a perspective of being remembered, you know, and making some money over the years, it got him into a lot of situations, including the movies you were talking about with Tom Selleck, that would never have happened if he were just a run-of-the-mill guy with a 5-point ERA.
Everybody's got to hustle. That's exactly right. So Brad Leslie is
exactly.
Exactly. Even you, Alistair, you've got to hustle. But let's look at the Reds right now. When you were on with us a month ago, you said 81.5 wins. You said, let's go over. Here we are on May the 2nd. They're sitting at 12-14 on the season. The analytics say this team has about an 8% chance of making the playoffs. Has your opinion on this team changed in the first month of the season, Alan Stein?
No, it really hasn't. I think the over bet on 81.5 is looking even better, because there's an awful lot there to like about what the Reds are doing. And the deficiencies that they have, particularly in the bullpen, are not necessarily fatal. And so I think they can turn those around. The one key element that is going to, the whole thing is going to swing on, you alluded to earlier, is Eugenio Suarez. He has to have a bounce back and return, at least return to the mean, because if he doesn't, that 81.5 is in jeopardy. But if he does, I think the Reds have shown enough solid all-around opportunity to be successful so that they can get there and have a run at the playoffs.
So you say Suarez, you say buy low. I mean, we don't have a choice but to buy low right now. 43 strikeouts,
right,
and 96 at-bats. You say
it's unbelievable.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, there's really something wrong. You know, I've watched virtually every inning of every game the Reds have played this year. And Suarez is just so out of sync. He's got a hole in his swing, as we say in the baseball world, at the down and away spot. He cannot stay in and hit a ball that sweeps across the plate and outside the zone. He can't, you know, foul balls are even rare for him right now. And we know he has the talent and the ability to be better than what he is. And if he can begin a climb back to at least mediocrity, doesn't have to be great by the end of the season, I think it'll make a big difference for the Reds, because they've got a lot of stuff around him that's working and looks good. So, you know, we're only, you know, 25 games into the season. So there's a long way to go, and I think the points are still looking up on the Reds.
Jesse Winker, quite possibly, yep, the best hitter in the National League right now. He missed five games earlier in the season, but hitting .370, leading the league in hits, up there in on-base percentage and war. Jesse Winker, can he keep this up the rest of the season and stay over the .300 range?
Yeah, I think he'll hit .300 for the year. He certainly isn't going to hit .370. But he has been consistent. He's hitting left-handers. You know, the first part of his career, they platooned him, mm-hmm, pretty much, and without any evidence for that. If I have a criticism of David Bell, it's that he is, as so many are in baseball today, very much in tune with the analytics, but I think sometimes overplays himself. Yeah, and Jesse Winker is a very good example of that. David Bell wouldn't play him against left-handers for the longest time. And he clearly can hang in with right-handers and left-handers equally well. He is a solid hitter. They need him. And he's also one of the spark plugs, one of the engines that you need to have at different levels. The Reds have a number of guys, Jesse Winker, Mike Moustakas, even Amir Garrett, and they're all kind of different in their leadership. Castellanos is a quiet kind of guy, but he is clearly a solid leader. Joey Votto is somebody that everybody looks up to, but he comes at it from a more relaxed and comical and analytical perspective. They're all different, but they've got some real leadership on that club, and that's one of the reasons that I think that they're going to be able to hang in there and be competitive throughout the year.
ESPN Radio 1392.5, The Bottom Line with Brad Taylor, presented by StableDuel. Sports talk from a handicapping perspective. We're here with Alan Stein, our Reds expert here on ESPN Radio. You mentioned Joey Votto.
Yep.
235 batting average, always an on-base percentage, just stud. But right now sitting at 306, he doesn't walk anymore. He's only got 10 walks this season. Seven times he's led the league in walks by getting over 100 walks. Have we seen a change maybe in philosophy from Joey Votto that maybe he shouldn't be going through at the advanced stage of 37?
There is no question that his approach is different.
Yes.
And it's not accidental. If you talk to Joey or listen to any of the interviews with him, this is all intentional. He has changed his batting stance. His correction is to stand more upright and to drive the baseball, not be as selective as he was. And he has said he's going to take less walks this year. His on-base average is going to be less than what it has been, but he is going to try to square up the ball and hit with more power. In his words, he wants to do damage. And in fact, that is what's happening. If you look at Major League stats, Joey's hitting 235, but he's in the top five in all of baseball in barrels, the number of times that he has squared up the pitches, and he's in the top 10 in his ability to have exit velocity and driving the ball for power. So he's not hitting into great luck yet, but he is hitting the ball with authority, and he's going to continue to do that. That's what the Reds have said they need and want from him, and at 37 years old, he's decided that that he's going to do that, and so far, so good. I think you're going to see Joey by the end of the year, unless injury gets in the way. He's going to be a 20 to 25 home run guy. He's going to drive in 70, 75 runs, and his average will, you know, he'll still be in the 270, 280 range by the end of the year. And that's what the Reds need out of him, given the lineup that they have. Again, it all goes back, in my view, to Suarez. No matter what Castellanos does, Senzel, the rest of the lineup, Moustakas, all of them, they are anchored around Suarez. And they need better production out of Suarez, and they need better defense all around. And that's a whole nother conversation that plays into where the Reds are going to go. The defense has to play better than what they're playing, and it goes back to Suarez also at shortstop.
It's really gutsy for Votto to change his approach at 37 years old. I can see it maybe younger, but I mean, for him to do this and not have the results, because he didn't have the results last year and he hasn't had the results so far this year, we'll see. But, I mean, it's for a guy who's a Hall of Famer, in my eyes, to change your entire approach at this age, it's gutsy. I'll give him that. But the thing is about let's look at somebody else that I have given up on, Nick Senzel. We're in the third – we're 4 years into this guy now, and he's still not doing it. You and I have talked off the air. I'm not a believer in this guy. I just don't see it happening. Your thoughts on him now, sitting at age 26. We've been dealing this for a while now. hitting 239, not showing many signs here. Buy or sell Nick Senzel, the Reds center fielder going forward?
Yeah, you know, I like Nick Senzel. I like his potential. I like his being a disruptor on the base paths. He's a solid, versatile defender. I would love for Nick Senzel to be more of an important cog in the Reds lineup. But if you're asking me buy or sell, as much as I like him and look forward to seeing his potential come to fruition, I'm selling Nick Senzel. Because it's been long enough, and with the backdrop, the overlay of his being prone to injury, you know, it may be time to be looking at another option for the Reds.
Let's get to it, Alan. The bullpen. You and I have talked a lot about this bullpen. We talked about Amir Garrett. What should they do going forward? They have their better pitchers are pitching the middle innings, and the poorer pitchers are pitching at the end. And we talk about TJ Antone now. He's easily been the best pitcher in this bullpen, and he finally got his first save the other night, but only because Lucas Sims walked three guys in a row. What are we to make of this bullpen going forward, Alan Stein?
Yeah, it's tough. And it's hard to evaluate exactly where they are. It's clear that Garrett is not where he needs to be, and so they can't rely on him. TJ Antone is the other end of the spectrum. They can rely on him virtually at any role they put him into, and he's been lights out. I think they're okay with Lucas Sims here, and they've gotten great production very quietly from the two new guys who've been there for a couple of weeks now, Embry and Hendricks. Between the two of them, I think they've only given up one earned run. So, you know, there are some elements there. Again, it's another David Bell manager role in this. There's a lot to be said for not establishing specific roles for specific pitchers in your bullpen and how you use them, and using them, as David says, in high leverage situations when he wants to do that. But there's a long-standing tradition. Analytics are important, but you know, you've got 150 years of history. Teams with solid bullpens, where everybody has a defined role and knows what is expected of them, seem to perform better in the long run. And I look at teams like Kansas City, where you have solid bullpens who have really led a team to a championship. Those guys know what their roles are. They come in and do it. And I don't want to sound like the old man, you know, get off my yard, but think back to the Reds' success in the bullpen over the years when they've had guys who knew exactly what they were supposed to do, from the Nasty Boys to John Franco to all sorts of guys like that. And messing around even last year and the year before with Raisel Iglesias and David Bell, taking him out of his role, upset the entire chemistry of the bullpen. And I feel like that might be part of the problem again this year. The arms may still be there, but I'd like to see them used a little better. Your point that the guys in middle relief are producing better than the guys at the back end, if you put TJ Antone perhaps at the back end with Lucas Sims as the eighth inning guy and the other guys in the seventh inning, sixth inning, you may have a set rotational pattern that might work. And I don't know where that leaves Garrett, to tell you the truth. They've just got to keep putting him in situations where he cannot blow the games for him, and until he builds back to his own expectations are as a reliever. So the bullpen is an Achilles heel, but I think it's more about usage as an observer. I think it's more about usage and definition of roles than it is about ability.
A couple of starting pitchers struggling. Sonny Gray started the year injured, 5.93 ERA. Luis Castillo, we don't know what's wrong with him, 6.07. You see these guys turning it around, or is this what we should expect the rest of the season?
No. Absolutely, they're both quality guys. Castillo, yesterday, though he lost the game, he was really, really good yesterday. He gave up 3 runs, but he is getting back into form. His changeup was spectacular yesterday. The first 3 or 4 innings of the game, he was painting the black at 98 and 99, and with that 84-mile-an-hour changeup and 88-mile-an-hour slider. I mean, he was really looking good. He pitched well. He is rounding back into form. Sonny Gray had 11 strikeouts in his last performance. You can throw out the first couple of outings that Sonny had that were not up to his standards because he was coming off of an injury and had a shortened spring training. But I think you're going to see Sonny Gray really turn it around going forward.
One word answer, Alan Stein. Yes or no, Reds make the playoffs?
Yes.
You got it. He is our in-house ESPN radio Reds expert, Alan Stein. Alan, thank you so much for joining us. Congratulations for what you've accomplished over the years, and may the winners be yours as you trot off into the sunset. We'll talk to you in a few weeks here on The Bottom Line. Thank you, sir.
Thanks a lot, Brad. Tell Miss Judy that she should hold you to paying off that trifecta bet.
You know what? Don't give her ideas, okay? She's already making me feel really bad over that, but that's neither here nor there. He's Alan Stein, and he needs to keep his opinions to himself. Thank you so much for joining us, Alan. See you, buddy.
You bet.
All right, coming up after the break, Angelo Carriero will join us to go over the NFL draft from a handicapping perspective, as only he can. That's coming up next right here on ESPN Radio 1300 and 92.5. ESPN Radio 1300, 92.5. The Bottom Line with Brad Taylor, presented by StableDuel. Sports talk from a handicapping perspective, and another one bites the dust as Angelo Carriero is in-house to discuss his NFL draft props. Angelo, how are you doing today, buddy?
Oh, I was doing well until about 4 o'clock on Thursday when Aaron Rodgers trade news came out that he wanted out, and then all the props that we talked about on your show just completely went up in flames from the perspective of what I thought would happen. So it was just an overall dumpster fire. Oh, and then the Packers, and to improve their offense, they took a raw cornerback from Georgia. So it was just perfect. It was absolutely perfect.
We could argue that the Bengals have had better first-round draft picks in the last 30 years than the Packers have, but the only difference is Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers is better than David Klingler and Achilles Smith. Your thoughts?
One of the Packers' first-round picks was Aaron Rodgers, so let's slow down there, Kijina Carter.
Let's take that one out. Yes.
No, we can't just we just can't take it out.
Well, we got 2 Hall of Fame quarterbacks versus Achilles Smith and David Klingler.
Those were the Bengals picks.
That's true.
That was the Packers pick. So let's calm down just a little bit on there, Cowboy.
What you got right? Wide receiver picks over 4.5 last week. What you almost got right was the offensive lineman.
No. It was a far miss on the lineman. I completely misjudged the offensive line market.
I was trying to help you there. I was trying to make you sound
I own up to it.
Were there any other props that you hit on the draft?
Not that I can think of. You're the betting man out of us. You could throw a couple props at me that you had. I think if anybody thought that the quarterbacks in the top 15 or the top half of the first round, if you went over 4.5, you definitely hit on that. I wasn't sure that Mac Jones was going to go in the top half of the first round after the San Francisco 49ers decided to select Trey Lance, but the New England Patriots seemed to be hot and heavy after a guy that could maybe come in right away and play in case Cam Newton's arm isn't able to hold up like we saw about the middle of the season last year. So,
there's a reason why, first of all, Nevada, not maybe the FanDuels and DraftKings of the world don't because they want the action, but Nevada takes down these draft props 24 hours before the draft starts because, hey, the information is out there before the draft, and it's too easy for the people to cash in on these big favorites. The Trey Lance and Mac Jones thing, you said you had Mac Jones going three.
I did, because I thought that the information that – because, for an example, I think I mentioned this to you last week, is that when the then St. Louis Rams traded up to the number one overall pick, news leaked out that they wanted Jared Goff. Well, within an hour or two, the news switched to Carson Wentz, and it stayed Carson Wentz up until the NFL draft, and they were like, oh, well, it's Jared Goff. Also – when Adam Schefter reported after the 2019 season that the Dolphins were going to tank for Tua, they, even though with the Justin Herbert rumors and stuff, they ended up taking Tua fifth overall. So I just figured this was another case of the information that was first leaked was correct, and that obviously was not the case.
One word answers. Did the Bengals make the right pick with Chase over Sewell?
No.
No. Packers, will Aaron Rodgers be their opening day quarterback next September?
Yes.
There you go, ladies and gentlemen. He is our ESPN draft expert, NFL draft expert. He is Angelo Carriero. I'm sorry we didn't have much time for him.
Thank you for having me on.
Alan Stein, you can blame him. He was talking about the
I can never blame Alan.
No, I can't. Don't worry about that. He's riding off into the sunset like a made man. He's fine. Thanks for joining us here on ESPN Radio 1392.5. Bottom Line with Brad Taylor. Email us anytime, bottomlinelex@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter, bottomlinelex. And until the next time, as always, may the winners be yours.
Angelo Carriero show up next.
Oh, yes. Angelo up next. Stay tuned.